Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today as we begin the program by visiting with Professor Bassam Shakashiri. He is a professor of chemistry at UW-Madison, holds the William T. Evu Chair for the Wisconsin Idea, and we're going to talk about the relationship between science and society today. Do you think the general public should be more aware of science and scientific discoveries? Where should the money for science research come from? We'll talk about education as well and how it might relate to the presidential campaign. And I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And Bassam Shakashiri, welcome back.
Happy to be here, Larry. Always happy to be with you and your audience.
Let's talk about the connection between science and society. And has that connection changed over the years?
Science is a way of looking at the world. Science is a human endeavor. It is important to have the very best connections between the practitioners of science and society at large. This is an important challenge because not only in my own personal opinion and professional opinion, but in the opinion of others, these connections have not been as good as they should be. These connections involve sharing with the general public what science is, what it does for society, what the limitations of science are. It involves sharing with society attitudes toward learning, ways by which we can nurture the curiosity of all of us to deal with questions that we encounter on a daily basis. Beautiful day today in Madison and throughout Wisconsin, Larry. The leaves are changing color. Mm-hmm. Questions always come up about the beauty of this natural phenomenon. So scientists should work harder and be more effective in sharing what we do, why we do it, to the extent that people want to know also how we do it, with a variety of audiences in the classroom and especially outside the classroom. And this is where Wisconsin Public Radio and NPR really excels in bringing science in so many different formats on your show, Larry, and also NPR. So this is a very important part for increasing the participation of scientists in programs like yours and other similar programs via social media as well.
You know, as I think about it, we hear a lot about the results of science, new discoveries and new cancer treatments, new this and that. But I'm not sure that we connect, at least sometimes, I'm guilty of this too, sometimes not thinking about the science behind what those results are. How those results were obtained.
You know, Larry, new discoveries lead to enlightenment. They help societal progress. They also create societal problems. To take the Industrial Revolution, for example, and how it has transformed life on the planet, for the most part, for the better. But it also has other consequences, the ones that we're facing now in terms of global warming, mm-hmm. global change. So discoveries are made, and you know, once something is invented, you cannot disinvent it. As I've shared with you and others on your program before, once you have a scientific discovery, it should be shared, and it should be done in responsible ways. The responsibility lies both with the scientists and with the audience. The audiences, in my opinion, can greatly help scientists improve ways for communication by asking questions, by wanting accountability for the funds that the general public through the tax system provides to support scientists. All kinds of questions that relate to societal progress and solving societal problems. should be fully addressed not only by the practitioners of science, but also by the people who benefit from those great advances in science. You think of just about everything we have in our society today, advances in communication, in healthcare, transportation, you name it, it's due to advances in science. And these advances, for the most part, have been for the good. There are other advances that, you know, we should be very careful about, and we should be paying close attention to developing a healthy interaction between scientists and the general public. And, you know, Larry, there is no one general public. No. There are different audiences in public. And everyone should treat others with full respect. Full respect is fellow human beings. That's what I really want to emphasize. I'm not talking about respecting somebody's ideas necessarily, but it's respecting the other person and engaging in purposeful and meaningful dialogue about the quality of life and how it is affected by science, how also science and technology can have a dire effect on what we have in society. So all of these points, I think, very clearly to me, are responsibilities to be shared by scientists and also the people who are at the receiving end of what scientists discover and what they invent and how science and technology have greatly affected our society.
And, you know, I often think that we, and I'm guilty of this too, taking science for granted. And I sometimes am reminded of that when I have a scientist on the show who's talking about the latest discovery she or he made and some of the work that went behind it. And you think, oh, my goodness, where did they find the capacity to do this? But I think when we see on TV or hear in the news or whatever or on radio about some discovery, we kind of take it for granted a little bit.
There are great intellectual achievements that scientists accomplish, and it's a result of deep thought, careful planning, acquiring a team of researchers. Could be graduate students, could be postdoctoral fellows, could be fellow colleagues. All of this requires very meticulous work and always asking questions and always be skeptical of the answers that we come up with for those questions. We make progress in science by being skeptical. And you know, nothing is handed down on a tablet. Unraveling the secrets of nature and the beauty of nature is a great intellectual challenge. But there's a lot more to it than being intellectual when we do science. There is the development of instruments and equipment to do the experiments. Computers, for example, have greatly altered the way in which science is done now. Great discoveries are being made because of advances in technology, the microchip specifically. Great advances in our national security are the result of science. But the real challenge to all of us, scientists and the public at large, as to how to exercise judgment. Well, I really want to say how to exercise good judgment for the benefit of Earth and its people.
Yeah, there's a flipped side, as you well know, to the technology, because I think in some ways we have so many sources now, especially online sources, and understanding where you people get their information. Now, they have more sources. We've had more sources now than we ever, I think, had.
Enormous sources of information, and we have to be careful in making selections as which ones are reliable, which ones are valid. Just because you find something on the internet, it does not mean that it is necessarily valid. You know, Larry, about the dialogue between scientists and the general public, I could not help but notice, and I'm not the only one who noticed this, that in the political debate arenas this year, science was not mentioned at all. Education was hardly mentioned. We have enormous challenges in dealing with global warming. Let me say again, as I've said before many times on your program, Larry, global warming is real. It's not a hoax. Now, whether we want to pay attention to it is the question. We must pay attention to it. There are steps we can follow to do to try to mitigate global warming. And so, you know, I'm curious if people in the listening audience feel the same way I feel about the lack of dialogue in the political arena this year. Would people in the listening audience want to call in and say whether they're satisfied with the discussions, not only at the presidential level, but at the state level, at the local level? These are important societal issues, and their solutions are not only technical in nature. They are in part technical in nature, but they are also important. It is also important to have everybody participate in the dialogue about the importance of science and the importance of education in our daily lives and our societal life.
Talking today with Bassam Shakashiri, and I hope you will join in with your thoughts and opinions on the whole question of science, science research, and education. As we visit with him, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Network. Tomorrow at this time, we'll be speaking with two authors about their books, one on Thomas Jefferson and his dealings with the Tripoli Pirates, and one about Ulysses S. Grant. So I hope you'll join us for that. Right now, taking a look at science and science education with our guest, Bassam Shakashiri. Again, you can join us, 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And I'm wondering, what are your thoughts, maybe some additional thoughts on how science can better be presented to the public before we go to the phones?
Yes, I think this is an important, increasingly more important dimension of what scientists are becoming aware of. The way in which scientists speak and talk to each other is very different than the way we speak to the public. The technical sessions that are held at professional meetings and at seminars and colloquia and so on are aimed at sharing new knowledge with colleagues who understand and who are engaged in the same practices. But when it comes to explaining science and sharing the values that we have as scientists with society, there is a lot that needs to be done. So, you know, Larry, you know this better than I do. Your own department, Life Science Communications, is dedicated to this. The Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy is entirely about sharing science with the public at large and trying to make sure that the public at large does not get bamboozled into making foolish decisions when it comes to matters related to science and technology. So you know, the attitudes that we're talking about are attitudes that both the scientists have and the public at large have. And there is a quotation that I am very, very fond of using in my presentations. And it is a quotation. I will share it with you right now. But let me say first, science is vital to democracy. Science is essential to democracy. And the quotation is by Abraham Lincoln, who said, and I quote, "Public sentiment is everything. With public sentiment, nothing can fail. Without it, nothing can succeed." And that's the message that I want all scientists to not only think about, but to develop effective ways to sharing with the general public what we do in science, why we do it, what the values are, what the limitations are, so that we greatly influence in a positive way public sentiment. What we're talking about here is attitude, the attitude of the scientist in pursuing explorations and making new discoveries, new inventions, but also the attitude of the general public in being receptive to effective communications between scientists and themselves. And this is where the public at large also has a huge responsibility. Tell us what you'd like to hear about. Tell us what else you'd like to be seeing from us. We learn together as we go through this.
Mike in Madison has something for us. Mike, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I just want to respond to the professor's question about whether we share his view on political people not getting the message here. I definitely believe climate change is happening and that it's caused by human activities, and I think everybody needs to hold their politicians' feet to the fire on this issue, and media needs to make editorials like the LA Los Angeles newspaper did last month. This is urgent, that as the president said, we need to stop using so much oil in our vehicles, period.
Hmm. Thank you, Mike, for your comment. And, you know, the telltales of global warming are really all around us. Today is the 7th of November. What's the temperature outside? But you know, temperature variations happen all the time. The trend in global warming in Madison, Wisconsin, is very clear. If you look at the duration of ice on the surface of Lake Mendota over the past 100 years, you can see clearly that the duration of ice on the surface has greatly decreased. It is much shorter duration now than it was before. There are many telltales of global warming. The fact that we're still here in early November experiencing the beautiful color changes the trees are having. And it's not just in Madison. It's everywhere. The important part here is to not only become aware and become informed. Those are very important. But the important part is to act, which is what I think Mike's question is all about. Action on our part to influence our elected officials so they too can act in a responsible manner suitable for the challenges that we face in society.
Mike, thank you very much for calling. I want to give Cynthia a chance to join in from Madison. Cynthia, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi there. Yes, the question slash comment that I have is about nanotechnology and disease. My concern is that there's a lot of things on social media that are speaking to nanotechnology and disease. What does your guest have to say about the creation of diseases through nanotechnology?
We have to be careful about everything that we do. We have to be doing everything that we do with full responsibility for its potential consequences. So nanotechnology is an emerging area. Fabulous discoveries and inventions are being made. But we should be careful in assessing the consequences of these advances, both in the science and in the technology. And scientists should take on that responsibilities, and the public at large should ask those kinds of questions that that you're asking. When it comes to disease, when it comes to health-related issues, once again, this is a society that we all belong to. It's not that the scientists live someplace else and the rest of the people live in a different location. We all live in the same society. We have responsibilities to ourselves and to each other. So that's a very important question that you raised, Cynthia. Thank you.
So you are aware of the diseases that have been created through nanotechnology?
Are you thinking of something specifically or what?
Yes, if you look at two bodies of work, specifically the work of Dr. Richard Horowitz, Lyme disease and other chronic diseases, he has a book on Why Can't I Get Better? The creation of co-infections and biofilms.
I'm not familiar with that work, but do you know anything about it, Larry?
I don't, and it's probably, it's not off topic at all, but it's such a large topic, we may need to address it in an entire show as I'm thinking about this right now.
That's a good idea. I think that's a good idea to do that, because the concerns that Cynthia is raising are exactly what I was talking about earlier. Tell us what you'd like to know about. Tell us what you'd like to hear about. And, Cynthia, I'm not qualified to say any more about that specific topic and the specific example that you have raised. But maybe, Larry, we can find...
Well, that's something I'll talk to Jill, our producer, and we'll see what we can come up with.
And, Cynthia, if you have some specific people that you'd like to hear on the air, I'm sure Larry would mm-hmm. like to consider them as guests, too.
For sure. Thank you so much for calling. And if to do that, you can just shoot an email or go on our Facebook page and post a comment there. But an email probably works just as well. And I'd like to hear more. And I want to give Mary in Pewaukee a chance to join us as well. Mary, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I really appreciate the opportunity. As I mentioned to the call taker, my husband and I saw a cowspiracy. C-O-W, and then Spiracy. Mm-hmm. And there's another documentary as well, and it's very enlightening. I did not see this one, but Meet the Truth, M-E-A-T. I'd like to hear what your guest has to say about the, since you brought up global warming, what he has to say about the meat industry and how our eating of meat and, cows and cattle...
affect it. Okay.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mary. I have not seen either of these two documentaries that you mentioned, but I am familiar with the consequences of extensive usage of water and how that affects the amount of meat that we produce. The water footprint is very, very high. That has consequences on the global warming challenges that we face. So I would say benefiting from research in science, in this case the medical sciences, nutrition, is something that we should be not only talking about some more, but doing something about. So this is not against the meat industry. This is to be sure that we take full advantage of what scientific research has clearly shown in terms of the food that we eat, in terms of the fluids that we consume, and making sure that they are... decisions that we make, decisions that are beneficial to us, and also to be careful in dealing with the economic consequences of such changes. Specifically, what I'm thinking about in this area, Mary, is the tobacco industry. Where for a long time, the tobacco executive were taking oaths and making giving testimony before the Congress that denied a great deal of research that was done showing the effect of smoking on cancer, not only lung cancer but other cancer. And so we have to be dealing with viable solutions to changes in our daily habits, in our food consumption, in our water consumption. All of these matters are on the table, and if they're not on the table, we should put them on the table and face up to them directly.
Yeah, and thank you for calling. Kermit in Middleton has something for us. Let's go there. Kermit, hello.
Hello, Larry. Hi, Dr. Shakshiri. Kermit over here in Middleton, and I'm very impressed and excited that you are, really highlighting the importance of climate change and the reality of global warming as an issue affecting us not just here in Madison but around the world. And one of the exciting things I've been involved with is the Middleton Climate Referendum Project, where we're trying to get people to vote this Tuesday, gee, just tomorrow already, on a couple of questions. One regarding whether the city of Middleton should consider global warming and ways to reduce the risks of global warming locally in their policy and actions, and then another, whether the city of Middleton should endorse a federal carbon fee and dividend plan to reduce the risk of global warming. And by way of, I guess, question is whether you think this vision we've had in doing this of not just, you know, encouraging people to vote, but using it as an opportunity to educate people about the science and the reality of climate change, whether you think this might be a way to proceed, maybe in other communities even.
So a referendum as a way of educating the public about a topic like climate change.
Yes, a referendum is a means of action. I'm in favor of action, responsible action, thoughtful action, purposeful action. And so, as you say, Kermit, it's very important that we educate ourselves first about what the issues are, and it is just as important to come up with ways and means for addressing and solving the issues that are facing us. This requires public action. It requires responsibility on the people who propose a referendum. It goes beyond voting. It involves making sure that all aspects of, in this case, global warming are understood. I'm not talking about going into the deep technical details, but we could if people choose to. I'm talking about altering the mindset and developing an attitude that induces more learning on our part. That's what these conversations should be. And a referendum of this sort it can be very helpful. I am happy to hear about it. I'm happy to see that whether it passes or not, I would be happy to have the people like you, Kermit, keep pushing forward to engage in respectful conversations about global warming, its causes, and what we can do about it. Let me clarify one point just to be sure everyone hears me correctly about this. There are natural causes to global warming. There's no doubt about that. But human activity has greatly increased the rate of global warming. And that's the point that I think we should be focusing on, and how our own activity, our own economy, our own practices, our own daily lives can affect and bring about change.
Yep. Yeah, and I'll just say what we found by virtue of having this referendum on the ballot, it's given us lots of opportunities then to go door to door, talk to neighbors about it, to talk to reporters, to hold press events, to hold public presentations, and that is, I guess, a big side benefit I see of the referendum itself, that we're stimulating conversation, not just locally here in Middleton, but getting even some attention on, local and national media.
Yeah. I'm happy to hear all that, Kermit, and if I may make a small observation, it's very important that we talk with each other, not to each other or at each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very, very important. That relates to the element of respect that I keep mentioning repeatedly. Respect for the other person as a human being, and to engage in meaningful agreements, disagreements, I think that's important. So thank you, Kermit, for what you're doing.
Yeah, thank you so much. Appreciate your call. And, you know, there are changing attitudes and changing public minds. I can think of so many times. Let me think. Well, one, here's one example. In my lifetime, I can remember when all the trash went into one bag and went into the landfill. And at first, it was strange to have to separate. And now I don't think anybody thinks a thing about separating out plastics and separating, you know, the various things. And it's a huge attitude change, I think, among people.
Social scientists have repeatedly documented how behavior is influenced by not only regulations, but influenced by who you talk with. People mm-hmm. in your immediate environment, people who share your values, people who with whom you enjoy having a beverage or having mm-hmm. a meal, people in your church or synagogue or mosque. These conversations tend to be more productive, yeah. more effective, because the people already know each other. I'm not saying stop knocking on doors and talking to people, but I'm saying develop relationships, develop meaningful discourse, and then these issues would be much better addressed. And that's the point I keep talking about with my fellow scientists. Everywhere I go, at professional meetings, and of course now on the air.
Yeah. Thanks again, Kermit. I want to give Bob and Eau Claire a chance to join us. Bob, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Good morning, guys. I would like you to know that I spent a career in Minnesota doing exactly what the good doctor has been talking about, and that is bringing empirical science to a level where fifth and sixth graders and their parents and other interested groups could get their heads around it and get their minds around a given topic and grasp it and say, oh, yeah, this applies to me. And if I do this, this will happen. Or if I don't do this, this might happen. And I was there for 30 years at a facility called Long Lake Conservation Center in Aiken County. I'm happy to report that there's actually an industry in Minnesota of what we called RELCs, or Residential Environmental Learning Centers. And we were all involved in essentially the same mission. You know, it varied, but in essence, we were teaching the equivalent of every fifth and sixth grader in the state of Minnesota, public, private, parochial, whatever, wherever they came from, bringing science down to an understandable level, but keeping it pure enough so that they weren't being misinformed. In other words, we weren't Disney-fying the science. Yeah. We were keeping the science real.
Thank you, Bob, for what you have shared with us and what you've done. All of these efforts are very, very worthwhile, and we should keep on doing them. I know you must be committed to continuing doing them. So it's important to speak with others in a conversation rather than to sound authoritative. And, you know, as I say to my colleagues at the UW here, when we talk with people outside the university, please try very hard not to sound, I'm from UW-Madison, I'm here to help you. That is not effective. The level of conversation, you know, kids of all ages, Bob, ask questions. And even today, why do the leaves change color in the fall? Mm-hmm. So they change color because the amount of sunlight is less than it was before. The amount of moisture in the air is less than it was before. And the temperature is lower than it was before. And these giant machines that make chlorophyll, the great green pigment that we see throughout the summer, these machines are beginning to shut down because of these three variations, sunlight, temperature, and moisture. And now, if somebody wants to know the names of the chemicals that are involved and what their chemical compositions are and so on, we can get into that too. So you are so right, Bob. We must engage in purposeful, meaningful conversations about the science that is involved. And you know, having said what I said about the chemistry of autumn leaves, I would like to invite people in the listening audience to my website, because we have an entry there that deals specifically with this topic. And it has in it not only what I just talked about, but even more details for people who care to look at it. So please visit my website, scifun.org, S-C-I, FUN.org. On the left-hand side, in one of the cylinders that we have on the left-hand side, you will see an entry that deals with the chemistry of autumn colors. Click there. Right above it, you'll also see another entry that says experiments you can do at home.
Yeah, I love that one.
Feel free to download those and do them together as a family, as a community. Not only the youngsters, but also the adults, because doing experiments together enriches everyone who participates in those activities.
And speaking of that, your annual Once Upon a Christmas Cheery in the Land of Shaka Shiri, that's up on scifun.org as well. I think the tickets are, it's a sold-out event, isn't it?
Yes, it's the first weekend in December. This will be the 47th annual program that we I'm so proud of that, and so happy with the reception that we receive. All the tickets have been issued. They're free tickets. We issue them to control the size of the crowd, but the program will be telecast around Christmas time on Wisconsin Public Television, and on our website we have listed the times and dates of these telecasts. Elsewhere around the country, many PBS stations also show this program, and so you have to check your local listings there around Christmas time.
Yeah, and it's a wonderful show to see in person, or I've also watched it on television as well, and it's fun to watch on TV. We talked about getting information out to people. Nadia Drake, who was with you the last time you were on the show, science journalist, and a relative, a niece of yours, as a matter of fact, has a book called The Little Book of Wonders, Celebrating the Gifts of the Natural World. And to get people excited and interested in her, well, her writing is wonderful, but just a wonderful little book that you could share with family and enjoy reading. For
it's,
sure.
It is a wonderful book, and it's aimed at all of us. It is published by the National Geographic, and it's just under $10, actually, to get a copy of it. It's really, really a good book.
We'll put a link up on our Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show. I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody, but Bassam, as always, thank you so much for being with us today. We'll look forward to your next visit.
Thank you, Larry. And my last request of everyone in the listening audience, be a voter tomorrow.
Yeah.
Be a voter. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Bassam. Bassam Shaka Shiri, professor of chemistry at UW-Madison. He also holds the William T. Evu Chair for the Wisconsin Idea. He'll be back actually on January 23rd. So we'll talk with him and talk about his website, scifun.org. And I hope you take a look at it. It's just filled with lots of great information and fun things to do as well. And speaking of fun things, one of the fun things I like to do is take photographs. And Jack Socha, coming up next, will be visiting with us about photography and camera options as we go into the holiday season. I'm Larry Mealer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.